Richard Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Richard Skipper Celebrates. I am very excited about today's show. This is the show, for those of you who are here for the first time, in which I celebrate artists and their body of worth. What makes a great artist? What do they bring to the table? I've got two great artists joining us today. But in addition to celebrating these great artists, I'm also going to be celebrating an institution, the Rehearsal Club. Now, my main connection, I guess, with the Rehearsal Club is the movie Stage Door. Although it was called the Footlights Club, it was based very much on the Rehearsal Club. It was a place for young women to come in New York. It opened in 1913. And I have two very special ladies here who are keeping this legacy alive. First of all, direct from Mrs. Maisel, we have her right here today, Cynthia Darlow and Gail Patron. And I thank you both for being here today. We're going to celebrate each other, and we're going to celebrate this great institution. But before we begin, as I begin with all of our shows, today marks 314 days since our theaters shut down in New York. Wow. And I want to take a moment to pause and think about all the artists that are currently out of work, those who are lucky enough, like Cynthia, she's gone back to work, and we're all better for that because Mrs. Maisel keeps us entertained. But I want to ask you both before we start, and I want to start with you, Cynthia. How are you doing really in the midst of this crazy world we find ourselves in right now?
Well, I have to say that what's happened with the Rehearsal Club since the pandemic began is a bit of a silver lining. Because we were all confined to quarantining and everything is virtual anyway, we got a lot of work done this year in every area, from surprisingly, shockingly to me, from fundraising on through planning every single thing that we're going to do moving forward. We've gotten much more organized. We finally have our 501c3 status. And all of this happened in the time of the pandemic. It's extraordinary. But it's really been, we used the time well, and it afforded us to devote our entire souls to it.
Gail, how are you doing really? And I think you're down in Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I'm blessed by some lovely weather and a dip in the pool from time to time. But yeah, that part is a blessing. But you know, to Cynthia's point, it's just extraordinary how this pandemic was a silver lining. When it all started, and we'd always dreamt of building a place for young women to stay in the performing arts, but it was a pipe dream, never thought it could possibly happen. But the demographics of New York have changed. And with that, with the COVID, the virus, there are a lot of opportunities now for performers to come to New York. And in our case, we're going to provide housing and mentorship and a flurry of services for these young, performing, talented women. And, you know, today, Richard, it's so extraordinary that we're here today. Today, the inauguration and the message from Amanda. I don't know if you saw the message from Amanda Gorman, the poet laureate.
Oh, I am in love with her. If anyone knows Amanda Gorman, get her here. I want her on this show.
Well, I want her to come and live at the Rehearsal Club. So, and she's, you know, she's a terrific example of the hope and the promise of this new era that we're going into. And with the darkness that we hope to leave behind more every day with vaccinations, we are opening an institution of tremendous potential, serving all sorts of women of diversity and need. And it's very extraordinary. And the response of our fundraising campaign, there's been a groundswell, Cynthia can tell you, of donors that have just come, people we don't even know about, who've said, we understand this mission, that women of today need us more than ever, especially in the performing arts, when there's so little opportunity, you know, that intermediary level. We're going to really fill a huge need. So it's terribly exciting, Richard.
I'm so thrilled about what you're doing. I want to talk a little bit about the history of the Rehearsal Club. I know that it opened in 1913, and then it opened originally on 46th Street, moved to 45th Street. See, I did my research. And then it essentially shut down in 1979. Interestingly enough, that was the year that I moved to New York. Ooh. And Cynthia, if I'm not mistaken, I think that you stayed. Did you both stay at the Rehearsal Club?
Oh, yes.
Yes,
year.
We're both former residents. Yeah.
So let's start with you, Cynthia. How did you discover the Rehearsal Club? And what are some of your earliest memories when you arrived there?
They quite frankly saved my life. I know Carol Burnett says that in her quote. Mm-hmm. She lived there also when she was a young woman. I literally arrived in New York on the Greyhound bus with no job, no place to live, and $25 in my pocket. Now we
from where?
Yeah.
Where did you come from?
I had been on tour for a year with the National Shakespeare Company, and I was directly coming from North Carolina to New York.
Now, was that where you're from originally?
No, I grew up in, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan and Newport News, Virginia, but I went to school at the North Carolina School of the Arts when it was just born. Okay. Incredible. So there was no internet, of course, in those days. The Rehearsal Club didn't advertise. We didn't have cell phones. But I had a girlfriend, a classmate who was living there. In fact, two classmates of mine were living there, so I knew about it. And I was just kind of planning to live on a sofa here, a sofa there. I did have friends that had already moved to New York, but I had no grand plan and no money. So I called my two girlfriends at the Rehearsal Club, and they said, well, we're kind of full right now, but come meet the house mother. We'll see what we can do. And the house mother took pity on me, and she put a cot and a room with two other girls for me. And I had a room and two meals a day on West 53rd between 5th and 6th for about $60 a week.
Now, oh, my God.
Wow. I didn't even have the $60. Yeah, I didn't even have that money. So I gave them $10 toward my food. And the next morning I went out and got a New York Times for the want ads and backstage for the auditions. No agent, no union card, no nothing. And started in. And that piece of being in the safe arena of the Rehearsal Club has made my entire 51 plus year career possible. If That's they amazing. Hadn't taken me in, I wouldn't have lasted 2 weeks.
Now, let me, and I want to hear your story too, Gail, but it's a thought that just popped into my head. Was it specifically for actresses in New York, or was it open to other young women as well?
It was open to performers, performing arts, aspiring people who could have been actresses. Many of us were going to schools such as the American Academy of Dramatic Arts or the Neighborhood Playhouse, et cetera. And then a lot of women were dancers. A lot of Rockettes lived at the club. Mm. And it was a sanctuary. And Cynthia, you're a lot younger than I am. When I lived there, I paid $21 a week for two meals and a lovely room with a fireplace. I had roommates and stuff, but it was amazing. And it was kind of shabby. Actually, I have a little, I don't know if we can do this.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Go in the other direction. Yes, that's great.
Okay. And so a little background in the story, which is really pretty extraordinary. These two brownstones were owned by the Rockefeller family, who kind of donated them to the Rehearsal Club. There were two.
Was it a dollar a month?
Yes, exactly. From 1920 or something until 1979, when you arrived, Richard, and the city of New York was going bankrupt. That's when the Rehearsal Club, within 6 months, absolutely closed the doors, and the women were literally on the steps with their suitcases. And there was a lot of publicity about that because there was no chance of meeting the tax situation on 53rd Street next to MoMA, of all places. Our location was great. And here's this is another wonderful photograph from the Museum of the City of New York.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can see it.
The girls, hanging out. And so to make a long story short, the club closed, but my goodness, the alumni are still around. We're not spring chickens, but here we are. And in 2006, the alums, and I wasn't even involved at that stage, although I lived there for 2.5 years, I was living offshore, got very involved with Kathy Connery, our emeritus founder, and a tea party was formed around a production of Stage Door. And she called some old alums and said, hey, can you get together? We'll discuss the treatment of our production. And that was the birth of the Alum Association, which has grown over the years. And there are a lot of talented women out there, all who went to the rehearsal club. They may not have become stars, but they were all so successful because they were determined young women, smart, courageous, and with great spirit and values. And that was the hallmark of the institution. And that's what we're going to do when we get our new group of young women. That we know that's going to happen, that installation of values.
The sisterhood of the rehearsal club is still in place after all these years.
Absolutely.
Some of us never even knew each other when we lived there, but we do now. It's just been an extraordinary thing. And producers came to know that if you were a rehearsal club woman, you had the stuff.
Truly.
You know, there's something very special about that time when you first arrive in New York City, you're first trying to get your feet in the water. Many of the people that I met in those years of struggle are still friends of mine to this day. And
absolutely.
I'm sure that it's probably the same with both of you, with some of the women that you met at the rehearsal club. I want to ask you, going back to the history a little bit, the movie Stage Door came out in, was it 1936, I think it was?
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, even though it was called the Footlights Club in the movie, did Edna Ferber have any connection at all with the actual rehearsal club?
Oh, do you want to see, Cynthia, do you want to speak to that?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, because I don't want to misspeak because I want to get my facts right. But she never lived there per se, but apparently she disguised herself and got inside and learned all about the what was going on inside. And then, and I don't know what name she went by, and then she came out and wrote the book, the play, and then eventually it became the screenplay. Is that right, Cynthia? Is there more to it than that?
That's my understanding.
Now, in my research, I discovered that in addition to these rooms, because that's, for me, that's what I always knew about. But in addition to, there were rehearsal rooms, there were congregation rooms where people were able to just be there. How was she able to infiltrate herself, for lack of a better word, into the rehearsal club and do this without being a resident there?
It's a fabulous question, and we will get the answer for you because we have an historian who knows all of these details. And I'm not sure, but she was able to do this disguise for quite a lengthy time. I mean, it's interesting also, Richard, that although we were all living there and many people sharing rooms and all that stuff, everybody was busy. Most people were trying to find, you know, $50 a week to pay the rent, and then also going on auditions and trainings and education and so on. So there was a lot of coming and going, but the gentlemen were only allowed on the first floor. There was the gentleman's parlor. No one could go up those stairs. I heard it happen, but when I was there for 2.5 years, it never happened when I was there. Not that I know of. That happened, I guess. And so it was a really busy place with girls coming and going and all sorts of stuff, if that answers the question.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry, Cynthia.
No, you could live there and not know everybody because your schedule is completely different. You're in rehearsal at night or you're waiting tables in the day. You know, you could easily live in the same place and never even know each other.
Right.
And but was your rent,
it wasn't still in place.
Was your rent based on how much you were making or was there a flat fee that you paid to be there?
Flat fee.
It was pretty much a flat fee, and they never talked about it. And I think they gave special consideration to some who maybe had less means or were really needy. And like in Cynthia's case, she didn't have the rent to even begin with, and they just saw a really good person. You had to have referrals. You had to get a letter from your priest or something. And but it was very, you know, it was pretty broad for those days. And our new initiative, we certainly hope to go to diversify. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to have a lot of very different kind of women, different, and it's nationwide, of course. Our alums are spread all over the U.S. So we're reaching out to them now to bring us pockets of talent, to recommend people. And we have a residency program that is just beginning. And that's going to be our feeder into this fabulous institution that we're going to be, our revival will take place.
Now, Cynthia, you, when you first came there, you were on a cot. How long were you on the cot before you actually got a room there?
I never did get a room there. I only lived there. Lived there only for a few weeks, like, you know, maybe a couple of months tops. I was lucky and got a job waiting tables in the village right away. And I had six other jobs, of course. And I'm just running around babysitting and, you know, cleaning apartments, whatever I could do to make a buck. You know, I could almost never get back to the rehearsal club for my two meals. It was really, really crazy.
No, obviously, I mean, this has a special place in your heart. It opened those doors for you. But what is it about the rehearsal club that still resonates so strongly with who you are today?
The support system that I encountered there. I mean, I did have two friends from college that were already living there, but I never saw them. We were all busy, you know. But like, for instance, my first Broadway show was a little hit called Grease. And I had never prepared. I had no union card, but they had an open call. And one of my rehearsal club sisters played the piano in the parlor for me to prepare my audition, which I was sure I was not going to get. I was just going to see how they run a musical audition, and ended up getting the job. So there are all hundreds and hundreds of those little stories where you learned your lines with one of the girls up in the room with the cot. You know, they go on and on. It was that support system, which is still in place today.
It is. And, you know, to that point, Cynthia, I love to mention that although we are all in the most competitive business in the world, you know, the performing arts for women, none of that competition really seeped into our sisterhood, because we were all sort of trying to survive together. So it was really, we were all lifting each other up. And so that's one of the great takes that I have from those years of the values. And today, those values still exist amongst each other. We support each other ad infinitum, and, you know, we do whatever we can for each other, and that's never going to change. I know.
And Gail, how long were you at the rehearsal club?
I was there for about two and a half years while I was training at the American Academy and so on and so forth, and I was working as well. And so they were so sweet, the little kitchen people. If you couldn't make your meals, they would do a little brown bag lunch, and I would carry that off to my job at the Statler Hilton, answering telephones in foreign accents and things like that.
It's been a while since I read Carol Burnett's memoir, but if I remember correctly, she was busy auditioning. She really wasn't getting a lot of work, so she decided that she was going to create her own show. And she did this with many of the women who were at the rehearsal club. And then they put their own show on, and they got the agents to come in and see them. And whatever happened to her?
No idea. But also during her time, she was one of the magnets to starting these wardrobe sales. So in those days, they had a very fancy board of people like Margaret Truman and all sorts of people. And these fancy ladies of New York, these doyennes, would donate their wardrobes of fabulous designer costumes, and they would be either, I think, auctioned off, or people would bid on them, or they'd be just donated to the rehearsal clubs. So these girls had fabulous dresses to wear, and the girls shared the dresses. I mean, you know, because if you had an audition and you needed a blue dress, you knew that blue dress was hanging in the closet. So people would borrow and circulate the clothing and stuff. So those were great days.
Now, we're hearing all these great stories, and I'm go ahead, Cynthia, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, there would be evening gowns. You know, who has an evening gown to wear to an opening you suddenly get invited to? We could go to that closet and borrow an evening gown.
Right.
And I'm all about celebrating, and I want to continue celebrating. But were there any things about the rehearsal club that were not so rosy as you're both presenting it to us?
Oh, God. It was shabby.
But we overlooked that because we were so grateful. But it was very, very shabby, kind of rundown old black brownstone with squeaky stairs and doors, that oak doors that had these enormous squeaks. And very shabby. And walk up, you know, it was a 4-story walk up, and shared bathrooms. And everything was painted that sort of throw up green color, you know, from the 50s, when I was there at least. So, but we muddled along and had good times.
There was one phone booth in the parlor with a cork board for messages because, you know, we had all live human beings for answering services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could hear people, you know, the phone would ring. Somebody walking by would pick it up, or we would actually, there was a roster of phone duty so that somebody would always be manning the phone. You would take turns manning the phone and you'd holler up and say, "Hey, Christy, you got a call. She ain't here. Leave a message on the cork board."
Right, really.
That's the way it was.
It seems like this romantic, you know, experience to be a part of. And I mean, I'm sure you both of you have seen Stage Door. How much of what we see in the movie is very much like what it was like there?
Very much like what it was like.
But not so glamorous. But there were hard times and there were good times. And yeah, it's not bad. But as Cynthia said, so many of us were not there for most of the day, that it was a little different. But, you know, we didn't sit around the parlor like they do in Stage Door and have all those dramas. There were some dramas, of course, but, it was a little bit more working and educational and that sort of thing.
But you both always felt that it was a safe haven for you to both be in.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, we were so naive. I was 19 when I first went there. And I don't, Cynthia, how old were you? About
I was
something.
23. I had just turned 23.
Wow. Well, you know, the girls I hung out with, we were really just trying to survive. We were so naive. We didn't know what was going on. So it was just nice to have the support of all of them. And then, and then once in a while, go out and do something glamorous, but not often. That was for sure.
Now, like I said earlier, I came to New York in 1979. And for those of you who may not remember or were not around at that time, it was very gritty. I thought I was coming to the world of Breakfast at Tiffany's. And actually, I was coming to the world of Taxi Driver and Midnight Cowboy. That was the New York that I came to in 1979. Yeah. Approximately when in 1979 did the doors shut for the last time? Then, because we know they're reopening, but when they shut down in 1979, when did this happen and what was the final reasons for shutting down?
It was the financial statement. It was June 30th and they were closing their books, so they closed the doors and said, "Bye, girls." Literally, they were locked out. I mean, they had 30 days to get out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, apparently the writing was on the wall about the January 1st of 1979, and they were looking around for rescue, but there was no rescue. And the Rockefeller money had evaporated, and as we all know, that's continued, and now there's no funding for anything. So so it was meant to be, but it was those were dark days for New York, as you know, really.
Absolutely. But when everything shut down, you said there were efforts to try to save.
Well, they spent 6 months trying to find bailouts, but there was no money available to them. So they finally closed. It was terribly sad, but it was something that had to happen.
Now, before we get to where we are now with the Rehearsal Club, I want to ask you both, how did the two of you meet?
Oh, at the Rehearsal Club.
Yeah. They're the alums. We were there at different decades, actually. But yeah, through our sisterhood, that, you know, we're all a bunch of sisters and great sisters, too.
We met at an alumni gathering maybe 7 years ago. Is that about right, Gail?
Yeah, right.
Six, 7 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, but we didn't know.
Now, did these alumni gatherings continue to happen even after they shut their doors in 79? Or was this something that got a resurgence several years down the road?
It had a resurgence several years down the road because of Kathy Connery.
Yeah, but there were pockets of girls who always stayed in touch. And so, you know, if you lived in California, for instance, we have a nice contingency of girls in California because they're all out there working. And so they all stuck together. And so they have a really nice network. And the New York girls kind of stuck together. But it's just unbelievable how many women are coming back, finding us through the internet, through Facebook, through social media, and are coming back. Last year, I mean, we have about small. We have about 80 members right now. We know about 135, but every year we get a dozen or so that are women, you know, they all live there 79 or earlier, and they find us and they come back and they are full of stories and a life of a career related to the arts. If they didn't make it acting, they made it with a dancing school or something, directing plays or whatever. And that's what's so fabulous about the women who came through those doors. You know, they were really serious, talented women. That's what we're going to do
now. Well, I want to talk about the timeline to where you are now. How did the seed get planted? Who planted that seed that we're going to revive the rehearsal club?
Cynthia, that's your story, babe.
This is a good story. I'm afraid I'm guilty. it was always my dream. Once the rehearsal club gathered together again, my dear friend Denise Pence Bookfar, she
who was brought us together. So Denise, yes, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Denise.
After me for 2 years because the alumni were going to write a book. They were going to collect 10-page memoirs from all the former residents of the rehearsal club and put them together and make a book that we could maybe use as a marketing tool to make another rehearsal club. That was kind of the big dream. So that's how I first got involved again with doing the book, which we're still looking for a publisher, anybody, if they're out there interested. It just so happened I got this wonderful, wonderful job with a bit of a profile, a high profile called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I had met an investigative reporter at a cocktail party at a gala at the National Arts Club. And I was telling her about the rehearsal club, and she was asking me a lot of questions. Well, investigative reporter, right? Mm-hmm. And she ended up doing a story on me in the New York Post, talking about the rehearsal club. Well, the next thing I knew, I'm getting hundreds of messages from all over the country, from actors, from producers, from realtors, from educators, all saying, oh my gosh, we need this. We need this. How can we help? How can we help? Well, fast forward, Gail had an extraordinary friend who stepped forward offering an anonymous donation of $100,000 that if we could match fundraising $100,000 from December 1st, 2020 to June 1st, 2021, that this person would match that dollar for dollar, dedicated to housing. Well, that really put us over the edge. Now, we had already gotten become a nonprofit organization. I found an organization called the Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, and they held our process. They were amazing. They were amazing. And then they helped us get our nonprofit status, which just came through several months ago. So we are ready to go now. We're actively fundraising. And it's just been a preposterously fabulous journey. We're doing this. And we got connected with a place called the Webster Apartments in Hudson Yards. They saw the article in the Post and they got in touch with me. I went to talk to them. They have this beautiful facility. And now we have, to make a long story short, we have formed a partnership with them, and we are taking a wing of apartments, the rehearsal club at the Webster Apartments in Hudson Yards, as soon as COVID allows us to move in.
That's amazing. Now, there's a wonderful documentary called Miracle on 42nd Street. I don't know if you've seen it, about the history and the evolution of Manhattan Plaza and affordable housing in those buildings. How will this be affordable to a young actress coming to New York wanting to get started? Obviously, the world has changed. It's a very different world. Will the format of the new rehearsal club be very much like it was before? What will be the same? What will be different?
Well, I can speak to that. The format will be more or less the same. Subsidized housing in a beautiful facility that is much more grand than our rehearsal club ever was. And the building has rehearsal rooms, and we're going to have a rehearsal piano. And but what we're doing differently because of this anonymous donor who's opened up a vision for us for mentors. And so what we never had at the rehearsal club was mentoring. It was a boarding house, and you went off and you tried to survive and found your way. So we're taking that whole concept one step forward, and we're going to offer immense support. Also, because we know that young women today really need it more than ever. especially diversifying women, if they come from a lack of means or whatever, they really need the help that we're willing to provide them. And now we have, this is being run now by this whole legion of alums who have vast experience around the nation. And those alums are going to bring the talent to these young women, where they're going to bring the experience and the wisdom to help these girls get a leg up on a serious career. So that's one of the most exciting aspects of all. And that's phase two that we're now getting into, which is really exciting. And so they will be subsidized. They won't pay zero. They're going to pay a very, very reduced rent. They will have to compete to get in. I think we'll have an audition process of some type. I mean, we really will be looking initially for very talented girls if they want the scholarship program. And certainly we will offer other services, mentorships and so on, to girls who can pay the full rate, which is still very affordable by New York standards. But they'll receive meals, security. Again, this is a facility, no gentlemen allowed, girls only. You can, there are little parlors downstairs.
Yeah, guys.
and the meals are divine. I mean, they have these lovely gourmet meals and various activities. Of course, they're really handicapped at the moment from the pandemic, but they're moving mountains to reopen. Everybody's hoping it's going to happen soon, and we are too. We certainly hope in the fall. We'll be in there by the end of the year. We're just not sure what part of the fall we'll go in.
Now, you mentioned... go ahead. I'm sorry, Cynthia.
I said we're planning to have workshops that possibly other theater artists could to pay a fee and to attend in addition to the mentorship. And it's an incredibly safe, secure place.
Yeah, we'll have social occasions and so on, especially for, you know, young girls coming from out of town who know nothing, you know. So it's the sky's the limit. And we're open to all offers too, of anybody who wants to help or mentor or fund or whatever.
We're going to get there. We're going to raise some money for you.
Yay.
Yes. But beyond the apartments, and you talk about these mentoring programs and everything, will this be specifically for women, or will men be able to partake in that as well?
Well, our charter for our, you know, for our nonprofit status, really, we are based on women, although that can be changed in the future. But the facility that we're going into also is a residence for women only. So that's number one. And our charter, our mission statement, it really pertains to women. Although, hey, it's a whole new world out there, and everything is changing. And we are open to all kinds of changes as we go forward.
Now, you know, going back to, you mentioned earlier the scholarship. What does that really entail, and how can one apply for the scholarship?
Cynthia.
Well, I am a chairman of the admissions committee, and we are just about to start planning all of that. Most of us have the idea just as a boilerplate to do it the way we did the rehearsal club in the first place, which was you had to audition to get in, you know, the standard a contemporary and a classical monologue under 5 minutes. Two letters of from theater professionals vouching for your seriousness. Those were the criteria that were in place for the original rehearsal club.
And I want to go there for a moment, because that's a thought that's running through my head right now. What was the criteria for being able to stay at the original rehearsal club?
That was it. You had to audition to get in. You did your monologues, and you had to have two letters from theater professionals vouching for your seriousness. And then the board of the rehearsal club at that time would choose the candidates.
Yeah, and also personal references. They really wanted to have young girls of character, really and truly. And they really did get them almost all the time. I never knew of really any duds or they were eliminated quickly or something. Because, you know, we were all pretty similar, you know, in our intent. So it was great. It was very good what they did.
So when you auditioned to stay at the rehearsal club, were you auditioning for theater professionals? Or was, who made those decisions?
The people on the board of the rehearsal club were theater professionals themselves. So that was that. Yeah. And so, I actually, when I was so lucky when I moved in, they didn't make me audition. I did have two letters of recommendation because my teachers had were already figures in the theater in the New York Broadway scene. So mm-hmm. I had people vouching for me, and I had two girlfriends from college who were already living there. So, and then I had just come off the tour with the National Shakespeare Company for a year. So they figured, she's got the stuff. So they didn't make me audition.
There was one time when I first came to New York where I stayed. They used to call them SROs. I had a bathroom down the hall. There was a phone booth downstairs in the lobby. So I know what that world was like. It's a different world that we're living in right now. And obviously, the two of you are geniuses in terms of reaching out to a wider group of people because of social media. If you both can address what you're doing with social media in terms of getting the word out about what you're doing.
Learning how to use it, mostly.
Yeah, really. But, you know, this is another wonderful thing about this initiative. The world is our oyster in terms of resources through the internet and so on. So we've been lucky enough to form an alliance with the Taproot Foundation. And we apply for certain areas that we're looking for help in. And one of them has been social media. And so we had an audition, an application process. This young woman who for me has just hung the moon in terms of social media. She's a junior in college at Chapel Hill, and she is so talented, and she knows all about the Rehearsal Club and all of us, and she's spent numerous hours redoing our whole profile to get us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Messenger, all of those. She says, you know, she believes that's the future. And we all know it is. We just don't know how to do it. And she knows how to do it. So she's given us 50 hours a week. She's going to, a month or something. She's going to do a lot more for us and then teach us the ropes. So there's a lot available to us because of our history, our reputation, and now our 501(c) status. And we're turning over every rock to get every bit of help we can. We have no employees after all of this. I mean, we have nothing except us, our sisterhood.
It's just all volunteer yes. from the yes. sisterhood.
That's amazing. And obviously the pandemic is slowing things down with you, but have you started receiving applications already?
We're not in a position to do that yet because we can't offer when you can move in.
Yeah,
as soon as we know when we can move in, we can go to town.
But what you are in a position for is accepting donations. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So get there. I've got on the bottom of the screen here the website for the Rehearsal Club. But if people want to make a donation, is this the best way to do so, or what do you suggest?
I think so. I mean, so the website is there. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of those things. But there is a donation page on the website that people can go to. They can also, if they need more information, we have lots of information. Here are two stars, Carol Burnett.
Again, I wonder what happened to her.
What happened to her? She was in her room, and so did Blythe Danner, purchased her room. For there's Blythe. We also have other stars who we're expecting to hear from, such as Diane Keaton and Kim Cattrall, Sandy Duncan. I could go on and on. The Legion of Stars that went through that place is pretty amazing. So, yeah, so they can do it through the website. And if they'd like more information, we have everything from a strategic plan, which took a year from our strategic planner to build, which is going to be extraordinary for grants and funding, as we know we've got to go down that road. We have to get some grants because we need an income stream. And that's, we have terrific hopes and we've got fabulous donors, but we have to create an income stream. And that's part of the next phase of also creating the residency program. So we're busy doing that.
Well, again, obviously the pandemic stands in the way of a lot of things that you can do, but what are the plans for when you are able to start opening your doors and everything as far as fundraisers are concerned and, you know, and other ways of getting your message out to more people?
Well,
I was going to talk about the plaque. You know more about that than I do, Gail. You talk about those things.
Well, okay, just in a nutshell, before we the pandemic ever hit, we had a lovely contribution from Blythe Danner to help us find a landmark, to fund some sort of a landmark on 53rd Street where we were originally located. Well, it took a long time to find out that we just couldn't put anything in the pavement, this, that, and the other, and it took probably 6 months to find the New York Public Library, who very generously said, yes, we respect your history, Stage Door, which won the Pulitzer Prize. We will donate a plaque in your honor at the 53rd Street location, the branch right across from MoMA. And so we have a plaque ready to go. And across the street, MoMA has offered to help us if, you know, things have changed since the pandemic. So I can't confirm exactly, but to have a reception for us out of respect, because they're sitting on our DNA. They dug us all up, all those dead bodies, extended MoMA all the way down 53rd Street. And so now what's left of us is under their floors. So they have said, yes, they would help us. And so we're waiting to do that. And then also the city of New York has graciously offered us a proclamation. So we will combine the proclamation from the city of New York, and it will be presented by Gail Brewer, the Manhattan Borough president, and at the library, hopefully, as soon as we can open, I suspect the fall, and then we'll trot across the street, hopefully, and have a wonderful celebration, hopefully, at MoMA. So that's where we are. So we've got that's a nice little piece. And then we hope once we know more about our residency program and our start date at Webster, we'll have a ribbon cutting. We'll have all sorts of occasions. And then what we do every 2 years is called a Rising Star event. And that's where we have an audition program and we audition young candidates from emerging from theater schools and so on. And we do a wonderful, a bit of a gala, a competitive thing where we have a lineup of industrial panel judges from the industry, some people like Simon Rubin, and et cetera. And we award an award to a young talented woman. And it's, you know, a nice piece of cachet for your resume. And so that's waiting in the wings too, as soon as the city opens up. So that'll be, I think, at Symphony Space. We're not we're reserved at Symphony Space if we want to use that theater. So we'll see.
No, you don't have the answers to my next question, and you may not even be able to talk about this at this time, but do you have a rollout plan for how you're going to start getting the word out nationwide about what you're doing?
Well, Cynthia, you can speak to that, I think.
Our new media director will be helping us do all of that stuff. We're contacting all of the theater schools and conservatories across the nation. Really, my big dream, I see this being an international housing, theatrical boarding house. I really do. I think there are a lot of people that want to come to the United States to work when we have it again. There's nothing like Broadway. There never will be. It will be back. And we will be ready to support all those young women who want to and will be a part of it.
And then again, to Cynthia's point, the silver lining again is the pandemic. The demographics have changed enormously. New York is much less industrial, but New York is the capital of the performing arts of the world. And so these changes in New York are going to open incredible opportunities, I truly believe, for the performing arts. And I think it's going to be booming. It's going to take a while, but I think we're on the tipping edge of a whole new world of performance in the city. God bless New York City. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not the ghost town that people think it is across the country. We are still thriving here. Gail, I want to ask you, are you still performing?
Only with the rehearsal club. No, we're doing things like podcasts and stuff like that. We've done a lot, but I haven't done since we retired to Florida. We haven't done much. My husband's also an actor, and we've done a couple of commercials and stuff like that. And he's done a lot of stand up, and he's done the improvisation and club. So we're always out there. We're always ready and willing, but we're more involved in grandchildren and the rehearsal club now.
Well, I want to ask both of you, because I do have a lot of young artists that watch these shows, and I do a lot of work for the Broadway Mentors program. What advice do both of you give to someone? Again, it's a different world we're living in right now, pandemic pushed aside. What advice do you give to a young actress or a young man coming to New York to pursue a career now?
Do you have
Oh boy, it's a tough one. Yeah, but you know what? I just have to believe that there are still thousands and thousands of young women out there who were just like I was. There's nothing else you want to do. There's nothing else you can do. It is a calling, and you must come and must take your bite out of the Big Apple, and you figure it out. And the rehearsal club will be there in place with arms to hold you and, you know, the heart to support you. That's what we were in the first place and why it's lasted all these decades. Even though we didn't have a physical boarding house, we will again, and we're going to be even more helpful to the young people.
So beautifully said, Cynthia, beautifully stated. And that it really is true. So although, you know, I would say to a young person, this wonderful statement by Carol Burnett that if you have a dream, you must go for it. You owe that to your life. Don't give up. Go for it. But, you know, you've got to be a little, have some smarts about it. And then, but it's very, very tough in the performing arts where there's no transitional phase from your studies to the acting career. And it's very tough. It's really tough. So we're there to support those people. And that's our mission. And it's really a beautiful mission and so rewarding. I mean, really rewarding. So,
and again, I want to ask each of you the same question again. But Cynthia, I'll start with you. You've been around a while. I have too. Gail, you have too. And a lot has changed in this business since we all started. And obviously, we all started at different times. But Cynthia, what do you love most about the changes in our industry today? And what are some of the things that you find that you're still resisting at this point?
I'm having a lot of trouble with this digital age because I just didn't grow up with computer language. Mm-hmm. I never touched a computer until about 10 years ago. And I'm having a lot of catching up to do.
I'm still learning daily.
Yeah. Ditto. I was almost not even here, you both know, because I couldn't even get onto this program. So that's, I'm really going to do some, I don't know, I got to do something. Clean up my act.
Yeah.
And again,
to hang on to that digital thing. And in many ways, the business is even harder than ever because now casting is global, it is worldwide. You can get somebody from anywhere. It's the internet. It's like, it's huge. And also creatively, there are a million more jobs, creative new jobs available now because of the internet. I don't know how to do them, but you know, some of these young people coming up will have computer background and know how to work the system. And yeah, so it's a whole new world. Exactly.
Now, Cynthia, you mentioned earlier that you got into the rehearsal club because of the contacts you had. Gail, how did you end up at the rehearsal club?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I came from a family that was kind of involved in the theater. And just on a short note, my grandmother was the president of the rehearsal club.
Oh, wonderful.
For 12 years from the 50s until like 1967 or something. So I always knew about it. And she would take me there for lunches when I was 9 years old. And she was born in Europe in France and came from a theater background. And in New York, she was married to a doctor and she became really more of a supporter of the arts. But she was a fabulous woman, a great supporter, a real philanthropist. And for 12 years, you know, she headed that ship. And that's the Carol Burnett days, and who was gone by the time I got there. But they accomplished wonderful things before the city went bankrupt. So that's how I got there. So it was sort of a natural progression. And I did have to have a letter from the priest, the vicar, but I did get in. So that was how I got there.
Well, in addition to the work that both of you are doing to preserve the rehearsal club and move it into the 21st century, you both are also really involved in preserving the history. How are you getting a lot of the information? Is it word of mouth? Were there records that were kept? How are you doing all of this?
All of the above. Some people have photographs and things from when they were there. We've kept in touch. It's a word of mouth network. We're emailing each other. We have Zoom pajama parties once a month where we get together and talk about and all those things. And everything.
And we have the memoir, which is full of little vignettes from people's memories. We have that. And we have a trailer.
Excuse me, is that available for purchase?
Not yet. It hasn't been published. So we're looking for a publisher.
I need a publisher.
And then, you know, it's got some terrific material in it. So we think that that's a likelihood. The other thing is we have a fabulous trailer. We had a documentary that was kind of started and it sort of has stalled because without funding over the years. But now we're in a position to, I think, take that documentary further. But again, our first initiative is the Webster Apartments and this residency program. But I think that's going to bring a lot out in the open because we're getting continual inquiries about are we doing our documentary? Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that'll happen in the next 3 to 5 years. Because it's really a worthy thing. And those years are gone. You know, the years of the New York blackout and that whole period in New York when musical theater really was reigned king and queen. It was all people breathed, did, lived. It was the American musical theater, which we were very much part of. So
now, again, as I said at the beginning of the program, it originally opened on 46th Street, moved to 45th Street, went to 53rd Street,
right.
And now you've gone further downtown with the Hudson Yards. What are your thoughts, both of you, on that location? The landscape of New York obviously has changed a lot. Again, 1913, I don't know what 46th Street was like at that time, but during the 70s and 80s, you didn't want to cross into that area. It was such a different area that you were living in. What are your thoughts about the new location?
Well, the new rehearsal club is at the Hudson, the Webster Apartments, as I said, that's on 34th and Dyer in the middle of Hudson Yards. Well, Hudson Yards was having a huge big renaissance until COVID hit.
Yes.
So that area is changing drastically. Plus, the security at the Webster is very, very good. It's 24-hour and it's a very safe neighborhood. It's also... it's a populated neighborhood in Midtown these days. You can, because of its location, you can save a lot of money on the subway and the cab because you can walk mm-hmm. to most of the places you need to be for auditions, or you're going to be taping yourself in your room.
Right. And the rooms, by the way, the rooms are lovely. They're fully furnished. The parlors, there are multiple parlors and various sunrooms and reading rooms and a library. I mean, it's immensely large space created Macy's brother, I mean, cousins. It's a huge space. It's going to be really fantastic for the girls. I have a little picture here if you want to see what it looks
like.
Oh,
I'd love to.
Can you see it? Whoa.
Screening room. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has a beautiful rooftop terrace, lovely gardens in the back. I mean, I wish we could live there.
Well, who knows? I want to ask you both, with everything that we've covered today, where would you like to see your vision, let's say 5 years from now?
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
I would like to have several floors of apartments at the Webster, and I would like to have it opened up to international students. I just see it growing bigger and bigger. It's such a needed thing. It's the support for the arts mm-hmm. is just so crucial. I mean, let's face it, folks, the arts are what completely got us through this pandemic. If we didn't have all this incredible content to be entertained by, we would have lost our minds. So we're needed, and we know it, and we're going to be here to provide what's needed.
Absolutely right. And within that 5 years, then maybe, because we're so unknown, nobody knows who the rehearsal club is, except for a few people on the interior of the theater. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice. I'd love to see a documentary to preserve the legacy of the theater, because there's a lot of great old footage out there, and there are a lot of stories. So hopefully within 5 years, that'll happen. There's been interest. There's just never been funding. But it's a great story. It's a great story.
And well, there's still so many of us around. Yeah. We need to do it soon because there are some of us who of the original residents who are still here to tell the story. So it would be amazing to get that done next.
Yeah, and also, Richard, think about this. We could have a series, right? Like Netflix series. Every room in that building will have a different story, you know? And so, I mean, it could be a wonderful series. So who knows?
Absolutely. Now, present ladies excluded. I would assume that the most famous alumni to come out of the rehearsal club is Carol Burnett. Who were some of the other celebrities? You mentioned a few earlier, Blythe Danner, Sandy Duncan, Diane Keaton. Who were some of the other actresses who found this to be their haven when they first came to New York?
Lots of them.
Do you remember Walters lived there?
Or Anna Russell, Jane Meadows and her sister Jane and
Audrey
Meadows lived there. There are a lot. There's the canteen girl who was great. What was her name? Real
Creator.
Yeah,
she died of 100 years. I was watching. I saw that on the website. Are you both, with all the work that you're doing right now, are you on Carol Burnett's radar? Is she very much aware of all of the efforts that are going into place now?
I think she is. And she's, you know, she's really quite elderly now. And she's really trying to back off on 100. She's apparently chair of 147 charities or something. So she's trying to, pull back a little bit on that. But she has always loved the rehearsal club.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
And so when you read her book, it really changed her life. And so, and that's those values that she came and inspired in all of us, those continue with her. And so she's always giving us her hugs and kisses and all this stuff. And we've given her an honorary award, and we'll continue to honor any of our alums that we can that support us. So she's been a fabulous support, always mentioned this.
So this is for you, Carol. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I can't believe this, but we are at the end of our show.
Oh my God.
I want to thank everybody that tuned in today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, and if you don't mind, please go to my website, richardskipper.com. Sign the guest book with your thoughts about the show. That helps to boost me and other markets. I also want to let everyone know, if you are around tomorrow afternoon, I am going to be sitting down and talking with Mary Sugarman, casting director of Tara Rubin Casting. This, of course, is on behalf of the Broadway Mentors Program. Look at the scroll at the bottom of the screen. I realize that everyone right now is going through difficult times. If you are able to make a contribution for the future of the Rehearsal Club, by all means, do so. I'm all about going out and doing something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. If you're able to do that, by all means, do so. And you never know, you may have a niece, a cousin, anyone who has dreams of coming to New York and pursuing a career like the three of us have been able to have. And they'll be able to come to New York and they will have a safe place. I love the ideas of the meals and and the mentoring and everything that they're going to do. So please do that. I want to thank Cynthia and Gail both for the work that you've done and that you will continue to do. I wish you a very successful season, Cynthia, on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, as you get back to work. May we all be back to work very, very soon. Gail, as you go into your next dip in the pool, thank you, Amy.
Richard, it's an honor. Thank you.
So I want to thank you both. But before we end the show, I want to give each of you a final say. Anything that you want to say about anything that we talked about that you want to expound upon, anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to the world right now as we start on a brand new journey. God bless all of us, and God bless both of you. Cynthia, I'll start with you.
Thank you so much for having us on, Richard. I've been watching your interviews for a while, and you're just terrific. It's a real pleasure and an honor. Thank you for helping us get the word out. That's what we need most right now. I think that once the story gets out, that we will have more support. And I'm just so grateful to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Gail?
And yes, Richard, I absolutely say thank you, thank you, thank you. And I just think that this is such an important day in all of our lives. I mean, I'm so honored to be on your program, but this of all days sort of triples the honor because it's such an important day in the future of our country and the world. And so I'm filled with optimism and hope. And I just hope that anyone watching this program and all that you do, Richard, for the performers that you work with is really extraordinary. And that deserves a wonderful bit of applause. And, you know, it's all about love. Let's just pay the love forward, right?
It's about paying it forward. And, you know, I would be remiss if we did not thank your tech guy who got you on here tonight.
Oh, you mean my husband?
Your husband.
Yay!
Yes. Thank you. Now, go and watch the inaugural celebrations tonight. It's going to be fun. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you.
Bye.